Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley for decades, and I do mean serve. And a good example of that is the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament a week from Wednesday at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Can't wait to see all of you out there for that. It's something I circle on my calendar every year and really looking forward to it. Purdy Insurance, this is how they treat their customers. If something happens to them, they jump on it right away. They want to make sure that you get the best insurance at the right price that fits your budget. All that and much more at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I know I can't wait to see Tom and the gang out at the tournament a week from Wednesday. Another slow news day. Hey, every time you turn around, there's a lot to talk about today. Sam Bradford has requested a trade by the Philadelphia Eagles. We're going to have Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia joining us with his insight as to what he knows about that. That'll be coming up later in the show. Adam Bittner, Post-Gazette, scheduled to be on the show today as well. Looking forward to that. The Tom Brady situation. This is not a ruling, by the way, by this court. It was a 2-1 ruling. This is not a ruling that actually deals with the evidence of the case. This has nothing to do with that. Zero. This is about whether or not the commissioner has the right to suspend him. And by a 2-1 ruling, they said, yes, he has the right to do it. Now, the one judge that ruled against, by the way, said, look, I read the Wells report. And guess what? He thinks the same thing about the Wells report as I do. To quote Clara Pella from Wendy's years ago, where's the beef? It's not there. So there are two winners in today's case and one big loser. The winners are obviously Roger Goodell, and a forever winner is Ted Wells because his bank account is richer by this. And if he doesn't like it, tough. I read it. You didn't think we're going to actually read it? I read it. Certainly took the most convenient conclusions over the inconvenient ones to make his case. Interesting way of doing it. And the loser, as far as I'm concerned, is the National Football League Players Association. Here's the bottom line on this. Remember, why? Ask yourself why you don't see Major League Baseball in court with players. Why? Why don't you see court cases? Because Marvin Miller, who passed away in 2012, Marvin Miller should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, without question. Because he changed everything in sports. Marvin Miller negotiated into his deals the right to go to have an arbitration board handle such issues. And the arbitration board, I'll give you two recent rulings where the arbitration board has shown that there's impartiality in there. They looked at the Ryan Braun case. Now, Braun eventually was suspended for a second PED situation, but they looked at the original Ryan Braun case and they reinstated him because of how everything was handled. Conversely, when it came to Alex Rodriguez, they said he should be suspended. So there's one each case where they handled it with logic each time. You may not have agreed, for example, with the Braun one, but there was logic behind what they did. The NFL doesn't have that. It is not negotiated in the contract. And because it is not negotiated in the contract, the commissioner does have the power. The court is correct. He has the power to do it. Now, whether he's wisely using his power is a completely different subject, but that is not for the court to rule. The court is not there to rule on whether or not he is wise in his use of power. As you know, as I've said many times, there's a big difference in life between book smart and wisdom. I'll take wisdom every single time. It's great when you have both book smarts and wisdom. That's a dynamic combination. But when it comes to wisdom, I'll take that over book smart every time. There's something about common sense and wisdom that mean a lot to me. The commissioner's ruling on Tom Brady is one of those that I think lacks common sense and was not handled with wisdom. Just like I don't think Ray Rice was handled with wisdom. Just like I don't think Greg Hardy's not his fault. Let's be smart. Let's at least, he tried to do more with Greg Hardy, and that the knocking down of his suspension was not of his doing. And I think we have to remember that. But there have been too many cases where you're wondering where the wisdom's coming from. The Brady case being above all. And again, no dog in the hunt. Don't really care about the Patriots. Don't really care about Brady. But I'm looking at this. It's absurd. Okay? At minimum. You want to know what at minimum this is? This is an equipment violation. And he is a first-time offender. The fine is a max of $25,000. That's what this is, if you want to believe everything that went into this. $25,000. That's the fine for being a first-time offender of an equipment violation. That's what this is. That's if it even... To me, the biggest part of the Wells report, and this is deviating from the ruling itself, because again, the ruling is whether or not the commissioner has the power to suspend him. That's what the ruling was about. 2-1 says yes, he is. So now you can take it to the full Second Circuit Court. Oh, and by the way, after that, you know what the next step is? The Supreme Court. Nothing more thrilling than wondering how Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to rule on deflated footballs in the Colts-Patriots game. Really? We have a primary tomorrow. Like, really important stuff on both sides? Really important stuff? And can you imagine the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Colts and Patriots AFC Championship game, which the Patriots won by 1,000? I mean, you're two steps away from that. Now, Brady, in his contract, had it restructured. He had it restructured where 90% of the money Brady received was bonus money. So Brady, if he were to miss the four games, you know how much money he'd actually lose? Go ahead, Sean. Give it a shot.
Not too much. Actually, I found it like an hour ago. Yeah, it's definitely not as much if it would have been on the older deal.
It's $235,000, yeah, as opposed to losing $2.1 million.
Huge.
Unbelievable.
And the Patriots' first four games on the road at Arizona, and then they play three in a row at home at Foxborough, Miami, Houston, and Buffalo.
Right. So that is the case that came up today. Again, the ruling is on whether the commissioner has the power to suspend him. Well, since they say yes, he does, then the suspension goes back into play. I mean, that's why the suspension's back in play, because they say the commissioner has the power to suspend him. Okay. This is, to me, one of the biggest wastes of time one of the biggest, and please don't get into the, the integrity of the game. What did you, you can't sit there. You have no reason to talk to me about the integrity of the game if you didn't read the report. I read the report, all 247 pages of it. Are you kidding me? You're kidding me, right? I read that report. You cannot read the report and sit back and go, well, obviously they did it. It's not there. And I don't care about the Patriots or Belichick or Brady, whatever. They're another franchise to me as far as I'm concerned. But I've read it. And when you go through and you read gauges and numbers and things like that, in other words, they only used the gauge that proved their point. The one that doesn't prove their point, they discarded. Well, who's to say the other gauge, just for the sake of arguments, the bad gauge? I don't know. And I know they don't know. And you want to know who the biggest winner is in this deal when it comes to, I mean, besides Wells getting obviously the money to do this. You know the other big winners are in this? The NFL officials. I've maintained the entire time who is let off the hook in that report. Off the hook in that report, Walt Anderson and his crew. Off the hook. If the ball that was intercepted by the Colts, which is one that led to the slippery slope, was so obvious, because the Colts claim it was obvious. They claim it was obvious, and that's why they checked them at halftime. Three officials handled that football to put it in play, like they do in every play. If it was that obvious, they didn't notice? Did they really check every football before the game? Really? Did they really? Done this for 19 years. Did you really check them all? Really? You sure? Something that mundane, that routine, really? They have come under, that group has come under no scrutiny at all from this. They handled the footballs on every single play. Every one of them. Oh, and by the way, a couple of the Colts footballs didn't meet specs either, you know. I don't know. The fact that we're still talking about this a year later, while being a ratings bonanza, it is, I find absurd. I don't understand why. But again, who's at fault here? The national, not Roger Goodell. He's exercising the power that's given to him. The National Football League Players Association is, in the end, at fault here. Because the Major League Baseball Players Association had this negotiated in long ago. Remember when Bowie Kuhn was the commissioner of baseball? And for younger people out there, you probably would not remember Bowie Kuhn. But look him up. Bowie Kuhn used to use a phrase, in the best interest of baseball. One time, I want to say it was 1976. In 1976, he nullified two midseason trades between the Oakland A's and the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox and the Oakland A's. The deal and he said it was each time he nullified the trades in the best interest of baseball. Each one. Because Charlie Finley was the owner of the A's at the time. And he nullified each trade. And I'll give you a, Joe Rudy was going to the Red Sox. Vida Blue, I think, was going to the Red Sox, too. Let's see. But it was, I think it was 76 he did this. And these were two big moves that they went to make. Here we go. Fire sale. For the June 15, 1976 trading deadline, Fielding finally contacted the New York Yankees and the Red Sox. He proposed a trade to the Red Sox that would involve Joe Rudy, Raleigh Fingers, Vida Blue, Gene Tennis, and Sal Bando for Fred Lynn, Carlton Fisk, and prospects. In trade talks with the Yankees, Fielding proposed Vida Blue for Thurman Munson along with either Roy White or Elliot Maddox. Fielding finally offered Joe Rudy for Thurman Munson. So then... Fielding was able to make trades, was then able to make any trades. He started contacting other teams about the possibility of selling players' contracts. Rudy, Blue, Baylor, Gene Tennis were worth $1 million each, while Sal Bando could be acquired for $500,000. Red Sox general manager Dick O'Connell was in Oakland as the Red Sox were going to play the A's on June 15th. Darryl Johnson had declared that he was interested in Joe Rudy and Raleigh Fingers. The Red Sox agreed to purchase both contracts for $1 million each. O'Connell had to contact Tigers general manager Jim Campbell to purchase Vida Blue for $1 million so that the Yankees could not get him. Gabe Paul, the Yankees, advised that he would pay $1.5 million for the opportunity to acquire Vida Blue. Fielding offered Blue a three-year extension worth $485,000 per season to make the sale more attractive to the Yankees. With the extension, the Yankees agreed to purchase Vida Blue. Fielding then contacted Bill Veeck of the White Sox about purchasing Sal Bando. He then contacted the Texas Rangers because they were interested in Don Baylor for the $1 million asking price. At this point, the commissioner of baseball stepped in, and he said in the best interest of baseball, he nullified everything. Now, in that same year, he did trade Reggie Jackson, Ken Holtzman, and Bill Van Brommel, a minor leaguer, to the Orioles for Don Baylor, Mike Torres, and Paul Mitchell. He did that in early April. Then eventually he tried to sell Baylor to Texas. But the commissioner stepped in and said he couldn't do that in the best interest of baseball. He could not do that today. But at the same time, in collective bargaining, this is taken care of. The NFL's collective bargaining agreement, which there was a lockout over this, obviously, as you remember a couple of years ago, has holes in it, and the Brady situation is one of the holes. In the end, it's their fault that this has happened because they didn't negotiate it and take the power away from the commissioner and put it into the hands of an arbitration panel. And remember, technically, the football deal is an equipment violation if proven to be true. It's a $25,000 fine. It makes no sense. I mean, this entire situation from day one has made no sense. None. Zero. I don't get the four-game suspension. A fine I could accept. I don't like the fact that guys lost their jobs. It goes back to them. All right, coming up, Adam Bittner, Post-Gazette. We're going to talk with him. We're going to talk a little bit about the Steelers and their draft, a little bit about the Penguins, how dominant they were in their opening series. Matt Leon at 4:06. We're going to talk about the Sam Bradford situation where he has demanded a trade. I don't know why he's demanded a trade. I don't understand why he demanded a trade. Why? He is in the catbird seat. Go out. Have yourself a really good year. A lot of people are going to want you if you do. Why demand a trade now? It makes no sense to me that he would demand a trade. He is in a great spot. He's going to be the starting quarterback for the Eagles this year. And he's going to make a ton of money to do it. Why leave now? Unless you can get a long-term contract. I don't understand why he's demanding a trade. I don't get it. And we'll also talk to him about the Phillies. Phillies have done darn well, haven't they? Really have. Starting pitching's been, you know what? They can get six good innings out of every starting pitcher in that group. They need more hitting, but that is going to be slowly arriving as the summer goes. It is a great foundation year, and we're proud to have it for you on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Back with more after this.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Don't forget about the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament a week from Wednesday. Susquehanna Valley Country Club will be out there for that. Show will be out there live as well. Hope you can join us out at the Country Club from 3 to 5 for that and be a part of the tournament to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history, 1909, home run Baker hit his first and only Grand Slam. It was a big deal in 1909. Since then, not so. 1951, the Soviet Union officially applied to compete in the Olympics, and they brought their doctors with them. 1959, Rocky Marciano retired as an undefeated heavyweight champ, 49-0 with 43 knockouts. Bob Cousy retired from the Celtics, went on to become a successful coach at Boston College. In 1995, Peter Nedved of the Penguins scored the game-winning goal 45 seconds remaining in the fourth overtime in a game that started on a Saturday and ended on Easter Sunday. And the Penguins beat the Capitals in the seventh and deciding game in the third longest game in NHL history. That is this day in sports history. Very pleased to bring in the head coach of Bucknell, Joe Susan. Coach, welcome back. It's great to hear you again.
Steve, it's great to hear your voice. Home run Baker, huh?
Yeah, home run Baker, a misnomer from the day, 1909.
I would imagine the balls are a little bit less lively back then.
You got that right. It was called the dead ball era for a reason. You added a couple guys to your coaching staff, Eli Wicklund and Stephen King. What have they brought to your staff that you like in terms of the synergy and the chemistry of it?
Normally when you have openings in a staff, the coaching community is a pretty tightly knit community. And we had a receiver's position open, and Lester Erb, who's actually from Milton, coaches at University of Nevada, called me about Stephen, and Stephen played at Buffalo, coached at Wagner for a while, and then coached at Nevada. And what Stephen brings is a level of maturity that, because of the structure of the demographic of our receivers group, with one senior, a rising junior, and then a variety of freshmen, or rising sophomores, and then two freshmen, it has really helped that group, and that group has really taken positive strides during the spring. I think Stephen, being a Long Island guy, he will have a natural recruiting base in Long Island. It's a hard area to recruit because it's population dense, and you've got to be smart about where to go and why to go. And then Eli Wicklund's fiance, Lauren Cavallaro, was hired as an assistant athletic director here for leadership. And when she was hired, David Bailiff, the head football coach at Rice, she came from Rice, called me about her, and he said the first thing he did when he heard we offered her a job is he tried to throw some money at her, and she wouldn't budge. But then he went on to talk about Eli. Eli was a graduate assistant at Rice and really did an outstanding job. And it was a natural fit because we did have a running backs position here open. And most of Eli's experience is on the defense side of the ball, but I think that enhances your ability when you make the change to the other side of the ball because you have a better understanding of linebacker pressures, covers, coverages, and our backs in what we do offensively. Obviously, they carry the ball a lot, but they've got to be smart in terms of what we do in protections. And both these guys are role models for the players on our team, and I think that sometimes the love is tough love, but I think that our players really understand that they care about them. And one of the biggest things, yeah, Steve, is the chemistry in the staff room. And that's
right.
When I have an opening on our staff, that's the most important thing because you spend so much time together.
You mentioned Long Island. I believe New York State is still going through a 7-game high school season. does that make it tougher for you to evaluate players from New York State because of the limited season that's happened because of budgets across the board?
You know, it does. And at times, what has happened in recruiting, and I'm sure you know this, things get so sped up, and our sport less than some of the other sports that we deal with, but having a kid that has only had seven opportunities really limits his game experience, and let's say he had an injury as a junior, or his team was a loaded senior team, doesn't have much film available as a junior, so he relies on going into his senior year, going through the camp cycle. But if we have a seven-game look at a young man, we'll know. And the advantage now compared to my era with 16-millimeter film is that everything's done online, and I can look up, if I get a name of a young man, I can look up John Doe huddle, and it takes me right to his huddle link, and I can go through his sophomore year, his junior year. So we really have been able to be a lot more efficient in terms of how we recruit. And if you get seven games on a kid, you should have a pretty good feel for what that kid's about. Now, obviously, it limits him in terms of his fundamental preparedness. It's like the states that have spring practice. They're so far ahead fundamentally.
Right.
That Connecticut does, Florida does, California does, Texas does. And some of the New Jersey schools hide their spring practice so their administrators don't find it. But, you know, it's that to me is an advantage, especially most of it's the warm weather states, and those kids are outdoors.
All right, the spring practice, you've got your spring scrimmage coming up on Friday night. What were a couple of goals that you had in mind to make this a productive spring practice, and how has it played out?
We wanted to find out a lot about our quarterback position. RJ Nitti returns, and he's really had a very good spring. But importantly in that conversation is to find out who is the second quarterback coming out of the spring. And going into the spring, it was a two-man race between Matt Mew and Jack Horan. And Matt Mew has distanced himself in that. If we were to play a game and we had to put the second quarterback in today, it would be RJ Nitti, or it would be Matt Mew. We have the chance of starting five senior offensive linemen. I think that's really good in this league. But one of the senior offensive linemen had knee surgery at the end of the year, so he's been down for the spring, and it's really enabled a young man named Chase Watkins, who will be a junior, to spend a lot of time getting reps at the right tackle position. And he's really developed a lot, a very good athlete, a very good foot athlete. There are times where that basketball-football carryover doesn't mix when you have to knock somebody off the ball. And he's done a very good job with that. That's important. And then we transitioned our quarterback, St. John Erskine, from quarterback to tailback. And having his development come through the spring has really been beneficial to him, obviously, but beneficial to us as a team. The development, we talked about the development of the receivers. I think they've done a very good job. Defensively, we had an injury early in the spring to Abdullah Anderson, and he will be okay. What it's done is enabled a young man named Alex Jordan to really take the lion's share of reps as one of the inside players, and he's done an outstanding job. We have Doug Whitlock back full speed, and then Ben Schumacher and Abdul Anderson were both all-league players last year, first-team all-league players. Ben Schumacher's one of the better defensive linemen in this league, and he's really challenged our offensive line. Our linebacker level, with returning Ben Richard and Mark Piles, who were both first-team All-League players. Those two get better and better. They're good players, they're good athletes, but more importantly, they're students of the game. We have seen the development at our corner position. We're fortunate that we returned three guys that have started in Nick O'Brien, Brian Marine, and Colin Johnoff. But we've also gotten a lot of plus out of a young man named Fasile Oluwai. And you say that three times fast. To have some depth at the corner position is outstanding. And then Joe Lauro, who played a lot for us on special teams last year, will come out of the spring as a starting free safety. Connor Golden will be our weak safety. He's got a lot of game experience. And then Brett Burke from Danville will be the starting strong safety. And Brett played free last year when Lou Taglianetti went down. And Brett's a natural strong safety. Our defense has some teeth, and the good thing about spring is some of the things our defense does really poses dilemmas for protections and our pressure concepts, and it's really good to work against one another, knowing that we're going to win the spring game.
Right. Yeah. The key. Okay. The people always ask me, are they going to win the spring game? And I said, if nobody gets hurt, you've won the spring game.
Exactly.
That's how you win the spring game.
It's going to be more an extended scrimmage just because of our numbers. But we'll actually have over 200 juniors on campus that day. It's also one of our junior days. So and just hope the weather. You know, the weather's gone through some identity crises here this spring, but
yes, it has.
It's nothing worth fighting about because you won't win that fight.
Never. Yeah, I know you we talked about your recruiting class, and then you added three more to it, and eventually those young men will be here. Is it your sense with the current team you have before the additions, that you're a better football team today than when you started for spring practice 4 weeks ago?
Yes. And one of the things I think that's really important is that you try to bring what you've done in the weight room onto the field, and that's what shows. We revamped some of the things we were doing in the weight room pre-spring, and that's the thing that I see that is one of our positives. The other thing is that you develop a team chemistry, and these guys love playing football. They bought into when you cross from that locker room onto the field, put all the stuff that has been bothering you all day, put it aside, and let it fly. And they've done that. I think this team chemistry has really grown and is a positive. We'll see, though. Tomorrow we have to adjust our practice. We start at 6 o'clock in the morning. We'll see how chemical they are at that time.
Yeah, but, I got that right. Hey, Joe, one final question, then I'll let you go. Appreciate the time, as always. In all likelihood, Carson Wentz will be the second overall pick in the draft, an FCS quarterback. In fact, Josh Norman, an FCS corner, out of Coastal Carolina, just signed a multi-year deal with the Washington Redskins. What does this do just for the pure reputation of FCS football and the level of talent that's across the board, regardless of what the label happens to be?
I think it's an example of the quality of the young men that play at this level. It's a tribute to those guys. And if you look at football at any level, whether it's FBS, FCS, Division II, there are very good football players. And a lot of it goes back to the approach of the staffs. It's a year-round thing. And, you know, we have a couple young men on our team that are getting looks, deservedly so. It's also a reflection of how thorough the scouting system is nowadays, where if there's somebody that's good enough, they better find them. Otherwise, somebody else will find them, and they'll get fired. And I think it's a combination of the quality of the student athlete at this level, plus the evolution of how thorough people are and have to be in the NFL. And it's great when, let's say, somebody from the Patriot League or the Ivy League has an opportunity to play. It just reinforces the student athlete model that, and the coaches, the GMs, the scouts, they want smart kids because it's a challenge. You think that what we do is complex. It's like the high school quarterback that we send our playbook to once he signs. And I know over the phone, he said, "Coach, this is going to be easy." And then he gets up there and they start rotating the safeties. He goes, "What was that?" I thought, and you look at him and say, "I thought you said this was going to be easy." And then you just multiply that by a couple of numbers when you transition from the college football into the NFL. But the good thing is that we preach the education, because somewhere along the way, they take your cleats and your education. They'll never take your education.
Very, very true. Joe, it is always a pleasure. You know that. The scrimmage is going to be on Friday night. Looking forward to that. And thanks for the time, as always, my friend.
Now I have to get to know, it's Sean, right?
That's right.
Yes.
I have to get to know Sean so that because he has to understand that nobody's immune. Even though Kevin, I don't know if Kevin's listening, I'm going to miss Kevin because he had no immunity. Do I have to find some? I'll warm up to Sean before we start striking the fire.
Well, you and I, Coach, spoke last season at one of the Bucknell football luncheons, and when I introduced myself to you, and I said, "Oh, I work with Kevin Herr from Eagle 107 from the Bison Sports Network," and with a couple seconds hesitation, you patted me on the shoulder and said, "God bless you."
God bless. God bless us all.
Joe, thanks so much.
Appreciate you, gentlemen.
We will talk soon.
Take care. Bye.
Joe Susan, head football coach at Bucknell. Coming up next half hour, Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, to talk about Sam Bradford's demand to be traded. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Great to have you with us. Boy, it was great to have Joe Sousa back on the show. I enjoy my Monday talks with him very much during the season. I love breaking down football with him. I like listening to him. It's one of the most important things that you do in an interview, is that you try to keep your questions direct and to the point and listen. I learned so much from Joe listening to him.
I could listen to both you guys talk ball all day. It's really, really cool. Love it.
Well, I mean, again, that's if you notice, I don't ask long questions. I never do. I just like to get to what, why, let's get to the point, because people don't want to hear me ask questions. They want to hear the question, then, but they, more importantly, they want to hear the meat of it, which is the answer to the question. So you want to ask the questions that you think of people interested in hearing. Sounds like they're on track. They're a better football team than they were a month ago. The backup quarterback situation, that's a real plus the way that's played out. Tailback situation, sounds like that's played out really well. And I like the fact that his defense, you know, and I wish I had a little more time with him, because I'd like to know, for example, when you have some guys on defense that have a sync and a synergy, how well do they disguise those defenses? Because now you can really play games with a quarterback, and an experienced quarterback, then it makes them better. Next half hour, Matt Leon, the Sage of Philadelphia from KYW, on why Sam Bradford has demanded a trade. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You have to have a great relationship with your insurance agent. It's always easy to have one when you're working with the best.